On the Record with Gavin Riley on News Talk.
Today we're going to talk about Ireland's Alcatraz, Spike Island off the coast of Cork, because there's a new book out, Spike Island's Republican Prisoners 1921, which examines the manner in which the British authorities held more than 1,400 men there from the ranks of the IRA. But indeed, although a lot of us might immediately think of Spike Island and its links to the IRA in the outset of the 1910s and 1920s, the story of Spike Island begins much earlier, centuries earlier, in fact. And it probably ends far later than a lot of us think as well, because it was still used as a prison facility right up until 2004. Today, it's a popular tourist attraction, and Spike Island's future development is very different from its troubled past. And Donal Fallon has come into studio to tell us all about it. Donal, you're very welcome. Good to see you as ever. You've written in your notes here, I've only been to one of these two sites, so I don't know this for sure, but you're assuring me that Spike Island is a better day out than the Coliseum.
And that is not just the view of me or even the view of the plain people of Ireland. That is the view of the World Travel Awards in 2017, Spike Island was named European Tourist Attraction of the Year. And yeah, this was remarkable for two reasons. One, as you mentioned in the introduction, the place was used as a prison right up until 2004, which makes it unique among its competitors. But as one writer put it, the island beat off competition from Buckingham Palace, the Eiffel Tower and Rome's Colosseum to win what is described as the Oscars of the travel
industry. There's a lot
industry.
Of queuing in the Colosseum. I can tell you that much with reasonably recent memory. But no, that's an incredible achievement to have.
If you've been there, it's a small place. It's an island of 103 acres in Cork Harbour. And yeah, it's come on this just amazing journey. A once hated symbol of the old order, a site that now attracts tens of thousands of visitors annually, with the potential to grow that up. Mm. And they go there on boats from Cove.
And it's becoming a classic of what's called dark tourism as well.
Yeah, dark tourism is this kind of very recent, very strange phenomenon. And a bit like Alcatraz, it is a dark tourism site. Mm. But I think it's fair to say, as we'll get into today, Spike Island has a more complex and diverse history than Alcatraz, because it's not just a prison facility. Dark tourism is basically tourism around sites associated with debt, with disaster, imprisonment and the like. And listeners who haven't should check out David Farrier's really entertaining show on Netflix, Dark Tourist, where he visits sites including places of detention internationally. But he hasn't yet been to Spike Island.
Is that the series that includes a visit to Chernobyl, I think? Yeah. Remember that there was a real Chernobyl tourism surge just after the miniseries came out a couple of years ago. But the place is still, as a nature preserve almost, it's
absolutely
fascinating.
Absolutely bizarre.
There for more than a few hours. The story of Spike Island is very much connected to the changing world, perhaps, of the late 18th century.
Yeah, there's some evidence, though disputed, that there's a monastic site in Spike Island going back to the 7th century. But the facts are clearer.
7th century?
7th century.
Wow.
The facts are much clearer, you know, we're talking about the modern age, if you will. And it's definitely clear that, you know, Spike Island, because of where it was at the entrance to Cork Harbour, it had enormous strategic importance in the modern world, you know, in terms of those who wanted to defend Ireland and those who wanted to invade it. And, you know, from 1779... the immediate aftermath of the American Revolution, which had just fundamentally shaken the British Empire. They couldn't imagine something like this could happen to them. You had the first artillery fortifications built on the island. But it's a volatile time in the world, you know. Not only is there an American Republic, God forbid, there's also a French one that you have to be worried about.
Yeah.
And if you travel around Ireland today, you see that time very clearly in the built landscape. We talked a few weeks ago on the show about Martello Towers,
yes,
you know, which dot the eastern coast.
And how they're linked to those era signs from above, yeah.
Lots of barracks went up across the country, lots of prisons. You know, the fear that America had fallen, France had fallen, and, you know, God forbid, Ireland could fall. So it's right at that moment in time, you know, when the world is changing and seems to be up for grabs, that General John Hope recommends a major fortress be built on Spike Island. It could hold up to 3,000 men. Wow. And he had reason to panic. Hope had actually gone to war against the French Republic, and he was thinking, as many people were, absolutely about the, you know, the defensive need to protect Ireland. But as the 19th century went on, of course, the fear of French invasion, you know, that falls away, and ultimately it comes to serve a new purpose. It's not going to be about defending Ireland. Mm. It's going to be about, you know, filling up with prisoners.
Yeah, and you have to put that in its context at the time as well, because crime is very much on the up in the 19th century, because there's a lot of hunger, there's a lot of poverty, there's a lot of petty crime of people who are just trying to feed themselves. And as a result, you do actually have more and more people, more than ever before, confined to prison.
In prison. And, you know, Spike is now a convict depot, not to the approval of all. One reverend insisted that while the site worked as a prison, he said the site and situation appear too beautiful for such a set of thieves and pickpockets as we have congregated there. It's too good.
It's too nice. Could you find an uglier island to put them all on?
So the use of the island as a prison, you know, during the famine years, convictions for theft skyrocket, of course, absolutely. And then it's also used as a site for transportation. That is Irish criminals being sent off to the colonies, you know, Van Diemen's Land and the like. It has a particularly dark kind of Victorian history. Mm. But the numbers are absolutely, absolutely outrageous. You know, it's overcrowded. On New Year's Eve, 1852, there are 3,562 people in custody across the island of Ireland. Okay. 493 in Mountjoy, 267 in Ennis Prison, and 1,882 on Spike Island.
Absolutely. So nearly four times what's in Mountjoy.
Absolutely extraordinary. There's 190 deaths on the prison that year, which, you know, so much for that quote about it being too good for them.
Yeah, yeah.
Puts it in context.
Wow.
By comparison to five in Mountjoy, and 845 people transported from there by comparison to 34 in Mountjoy. So Mountjoy, in the popular memory in Ireland, has always been a particularly grisly prison and a particularly nasty prison to find yourself in. But it seems Spike Island was the worst of the worst.
God, it really was Ireland's Alcatraz in more ways than one. The most famous prisoner to pass through it was probably one of the most controversial, and it's a name that we had a bit of a societal discussion about in recent years, that of John Mitchell.
John Mitchell's, you know, reputation, quite rightly, under the microscope in more recent times. A really strange life, firebrand Irish separatist, but somehow becomes an apologist and an active campaigner for the Confederacy in the US Civil War. And he's kind of remembered now as one of the leading ideological champions of slavery as an institution. Yeah. You know, much more pro-slavery than even some in the Confederacy themselves were. It was a very odd life journey that he went on. And of course, it's causing headaches for all kinds of people around Ireland, including GAA clubs
that are named after him,
and the like. But he's twice elected to the British House of Commons, twice denied his seat as a convicted felon. And in Ireland, he's remembered primarily still as an uncompromising separatist.
But we should mention, for people who aren't familiar with it, that's the reason why there's a lot of GAA clubs named after him, because he was an Irish separatist, not because he was pro-slavery.
Absolutely. And that is a very, very important distinction to make. But he's tried, he's sentenced to be transported beyond the seas for the terms of 14 years. Mm. His journey brings him to Bermuda, to Van Diemen's Land, but begins on Spike Island. And he writes what's, you know, probably one of the most important texts of 19th century Ireland, which is his jail journal. He begins writing it at Spike Island. It had a massive formative influence on the revolutionary generation. Mm. So when you go to Spike Island today, they talk a lot about, and the controversies around, John Mitchell, but it's quite remarkable that he passed through that place.
Yeah, it's pretty striking, actually, when you even just mention his jail journal, and it brings him to Van Diemen's Land and to Bermuda. And it kind of just makes your mind goggle a little bit at just how much Britain decided that basically all of the remote islands of the world were basically going to be used permanently as its prisons. Of course, then by 1921, we're a slightly different time, and it's back putting political prisoners back on Spike Island. And that kind of reflects how the War of Independence was playing out.
Yeah, by the time of the Irish Revolution, the British are kind of deeply panicked, and they're looking at Spike Island as a potential place to put prisoners once again. Martial law is imposed, and Tom O'Neill has written this great new book on Spike Island. He says the prisoners were almost exclusively from the six counties of Munster. The remainder were from counties Wexford and Kilkenny. These were the counties placed under martial law by the British government at the end of 1920 and early 21, because they were the most violent counties in Ireland at the time.
They're the hurling counties.
The hurling counties, which may have been a factor.
And Kerry, yeah.
The violence of hurling transcends into the violence of politics. But, I mean, there have been a number of very humiliating prisoner escapes across the island of Ireland for the British, actually from the prior mentioned Mountjoy, among other places. Mm. And I think the island offered solutions to this as far as they were concerned. But despite the optimism of the British, some prisoners actually did escape. There's a great story, April 1921, the Spike prisoners are engaged in building a golf course, of course not for themselves or their pleasure, but for the officers on the island, and they use a chance during the confusion of construction to make a break for it. A boat arrives waving a Union Jack, and the lads get on and get away.
Fair play to them for trying it. It's a little bit like the scene in Shawshank Redemption when they're up tarring the roof, and you go, this would be a great opportunity now just to leg it, because you just left the prison guards behind on a roof, hot tarpaulin roof with some beers. Sure, what are they going to do if you make it run for it now? Strangely, and this is one of the curiosities, it might be up there with the ports and stuff, even after independence, Ireland didn't control Spike Island. It was still left in British hands.
Yeah, the Anglo-Irish Treaty is a really imperfect end to the Irish question, you know, as far as the British and as far as we were concerned. It left a lot of question marks around a whole host of things. And one of the peculiarities of the treaty was what was known as the Treaty Ports. So even after independence, the British remain on Spike Island. There's a Royal Navy presence there, and British sovereignty extends on the island until July 1938, right before the Second World War, which was a disaster from the British point of view. They'd just given these things away that they really needed.
Yeah.
But it must have been bizarre to be a member of the British Navy on Spike Island in 1936, 37, the Ireland of Eamon de Valera. Fianna Fáil are in power. You're surrounded by the Free State. And yet you're technically...
Imperial outpost. We must actually get you to come back and talk about the treaty ports and just how kind of a curiosity they were, because that legacy still lives to this day in the weird ownership of Rosslare Harbour, which is still partly half-owned by Iain Rodarran and half-owned by whichever was the Welsh or the Fishguard Railway at the time or something.
And I really hope now that, you know, things are getting better in the country with COVID and the like, that we can recreate the treaty debates in the Dáil, because the ports were such a part of that.
Yeah. Learning nothing, of course, and that wouldn't be just curiously Irish phenomenon of learning nothing about some of the difficulties of the past. Even after the Spike Island falls back into Irish hands, we just decide to keep using it as a prison and it doesn't go too well.
What could we do with it? You know, after getting our hands on it, absolutely nothing changes. It's a prison, it's a youth detention centre, and people kind of forget it's there. And then in 1985, there's an enormous riot on the island, absolutely remarkable. There's archive of Charlie Bird reporting on it for RTE, and he describes how nearly 12 hours after the rioting began, the clouds of smoke still hung over the charred and burnt out administration block and the prisoners' accommodation quarters. Like the strange ways riot, you know, on the neighbouring island, only this thing was happening on a remote island. You know, and on that occasion, the logic of an island prison was being questioned by some. When they had their inquiry in the Dáil, they made the point that the riot left civilians, prison officers and Gardaí on the island virtual prisoners of the criminals. So it's one thing to hold people on an island, but when they get control of the island, roles reverse very quickly. And John Cuff, a prison officer who was working at the time, he describes coming in from Cove and seeing Spike Island in the distance. I just love the hyperbole of this, but it's beautifully written. The horizon over the Cove of Cork was glowing red like a scene from Apocalypse Now. Coming down the hill, I spied abandoned Garda vans, cars and army trucks along with police motorbikes. But his memoir, John Cuff, it's a brilliant memoir. There's very few memoirs written by prison officers. And to put it lightly, you know, what you get from John's book is that this was a particularly difficult working environment. I think the wheels were in motion after that riot to shut down Spike as a place of detention. But Irish bureaucracy being Irish bureaucracy, the riot was 1985, the prison closed in 2004.
Yeah, but it's not only Irish bureaucracy, because I'm reminded of Barack Obama getting to office and saying he was going to shut down Guantanamo Bay in a few months, and it's still going now, 13 years later. The future is brighter, thankfully, for Spike Island. And in peacetime, there were a lot of visitors, and hopefully more and more visitors, the aim in the years ahead.
Yeah, I think, look, Irish heritage and tourism should be optimistic. Obviously, numbers, you know, fell off a cliff, but that happened everywhere. And they'll rebound and things will come back better and stronger than they were. And I mean, this is not just a tourist attraction. It's a world-class one, recognised by its international peers. And it's a really difficult task for them, you know, by comparison to most Irish heritage sites, which have had one function and have done that through history. They're trying to tell a story that swerves through centuries, you know, from the days of Napoleon to its closure in 2004. But it's well worth going, not just for Spike Island itself, but the journey to get there, the ferry from Cove, about 15 minutes normally, depending what mood the weather is in, how volatile it's feeling. But it's definitely something, you know, to consider in the months ahead. And, you know, unlike previous generations of visitors, you're free to leave whenever you want.
Pending the sailing timetable, of course. That's a real day, and I must plan for that one whenever circumstances do allow again. Donald Fallon, as ever, thank you very much for that. Donald Fallon, author, historian, author of the Come Here To Me books and also of Henrietta Street, From Tenement to Suburbia, available in all good bookshops now. He's also the presenter of the Three Castles Burning podcast on Dublin history, which you'll find anywhere you get your podcasts.
On the Record
with Gavin Riley
on News Talk